Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to the Living Free Show on 3CR Community Radio, 855 kHz on your AM dial. I'm Anne, and I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present, and to acknowledge that the material and spiritual connection of Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them. Each week on the Living Free Show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drug, alcohol, gambling, food and other addictions. Our guests share their recovery stories and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Before we start, I'd like to remind you that the Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm and family violence. Please practice self-care and care of others when listening. Today I'm joined in the studio by Andy.
Hello.
Hello, Andy.
How are you, Anne?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Andy's a member of Al-Anon Family Groups, a support group for families of alcoholics. And today he's going to tell us his story, and then we're going to talk a little bit at the end probably about how Al-Anon works. We'll just see. We'll just have a chat. So thanks for coming in.
That's okay.
And would you please tell us where it all began for you in life?
Okay, thank you. So I grew up in a small village in the north of England, older brother, older sister, and my parents were always married, never got divorced or anything, and my father was an alcoholic, and yeah, I was sort of always a bit hesitant to say he was an alcoholic, you know. And I do regular Al-Anon meetings, which is for family and friends of alcoholics. And it's not usual to say he's an alcoholic or she's an alcoholic or whatever. It's sort of, but I actually say it not as anything offensive or even as a label. It's just because that's the recovery program I'm in, and I have to know what I'm dealing with. So if I say my father was an alcoholic, because he died 15 years ago of this disease, and actually on his death certificate, the doctor who was in charge of that department actually wrote on it, died from alcoholic liver disease. So I just, I'm sort of fast forwarding it a bit, but when my father died 15 years ago and I saw that word on the death certificate, I went and found, I said, can I see the doctor? Or when the doctor's around, can you just send him in to me whenever he's ready? And they said, what do you want to talk to him about? And I said, well, actually, I want to thank him for putting the word alcoholic on the death certificate, because there was a lot of denial. You know, there's a lot of denial. You know, it's probably more commonly known that with alcoholics, there's a lot of denial about their drinking, their disease. But there's also a lot of denial in the alcoholic home. So I wanted to thank him and say, thanks for bringing it up. And that it would make it easier for my family with the grieving with my father, not just for his death, but for the whole story of decades of alcoholism. And actually, even though it's 15 years ago, I'd been in the Al-Anon program for a number of years before that, actually. So anyway, going back to when I was a bit younger. So I grew up in a small village of about 300 people or something. And there was a lot of drinking in the village. Everyone knew everyone. It was kind of a bit like, I look back on it now and sort of imagine it back 100 years before it was, you know, because I grew up in a national park, so there were no new buildings around. It was all just really old and preserved, as it still is now. And it just seemed, I look back on it, as a very old-fashioned thing. Now, the first thing I should say, or the next thing, is that, and I'm actually reluctant to say this when I go back to England, because I do meetings when I'm in England as well, is that my brother, my sister and I got sent away to boarding schools at a young age. And so my brother, my sister, myself, so my brother's 4 years older than me and my sister's in the middle, she's 2 years older. We all got sent away within a couple of years. So my brother got sent away first, I think, and he was 10 and my sister was 9 and I was 8. So we got sent away within a couple of years. And it took me a few years in Al-Anon to bring this up, because I didn't know whether it was part of my story. I didn't know whether people in the meetings were going to think that it was an issue that was outside of alcoholism. But I'd been in enough years in the program where I thought, well, actually, no, this is part of my story. Mm-hmm. Because, the way I started to see it is that parents in their right minds, and they weren't because there was alcoholism in the home, would not send their kids away that young. And,
except they were English.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So we were already repressed to start with, right? So, yeah, it is part of the story. And I don't know what, you know, years later when I got out here and I started getting recovery, I still don't know what the dynamics were in us getting sent away. But I don't really need to know as such. We were sent away and actually, again, sort of jumping around a bit time-wise, when I'd been in the Al-Anon program about probably around the time my dad died, I was starting to look into why these boarding schools existed. They were called prep schools. So if you do the whole 10-year sentence, because I refer to it as not boarding school now, but like a prison, really. Mm-hmm, it was kind of like, mm-hmm. Except we hadn't really done anything mm-hmm, wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. So I had to, because I wasn't going to get any answers from my family, I had to look into what the history of boarding schools were in England, why they came about, and what function did they serve. So I kind of looked into it, and I did a lot of research about it in my mid-30s, and I found some good research about it and some authors and some good books. And anyway, the main thing I came out with is that if you get sent away from your family at 13 years old or younger, there is inevitable damage from it. Mm. In the boarding school research that they've done with ex-boarders from England, boys and girls, mostly boys, if you get sent away at 14 years and older, the damage isn't inevitable, but you would have to be a pretty emotionally secure person at 14 or 15 to be sent away. So really, sort of, if you know, it's more applicable when you're sort of 17, 18, years 11, 12, something like that, maybe 10, 11, 12.
You mean more beneficial?
Well, when there's more independence and they can start making their own decisions a bit more. Otherwise, before that, you just get told and you can't explain things, particularly from an alcoholic home. So we just went and we did what we were told, and it was another world, and it was very, very different from the alcoholic home. So the home that I grew up, so we'd be away at boarding school for two-thirds of any 1 year, so we'd be home for one-third of the year. And, of course, we'd lost contact with everyone in the village. Well, not contact, but the those sort of threads of contact had been frayed and sometimes severed. So we came back to a place where that people didn't know as much anymore. They knew my parents because my parents were always there. So there's a lot of dynamics. And then because of what happened at school, you know, the discipline and the facilities and the sport, which I've sort of now learnt to be a lot more grateful for. You know, as I've got better, I've drawn out a lot of those, the benefits, you know, and the privileges, really. So it's just that I had to look at it all round.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I was quite struck by, we don't need to labour this, but I just wanted to put it out there because I think it's quite interesting that you're reluctant to label the alcoholic, but you're quite happy to label the disease. And I think that's a really great distinction because, as you say, labelling, it means you're able to deal with it. You know what it is you're dealing with, whereas labelling the person is a bit disrespectful unless they've already labelled themselves. So I just wanted to make that point. But with the boarding school, were there protective factors then? Was there any advantage to you to be there instead of in the alcoholic home, do you think?
Well, I don't. It's hard to know, isn't it? Mm. I think by the time I got to 15, I wanted to leave. I just wanted to go to the local state school because I knew I did know people around there because I was good at sport and I was good at cricket particularly, and I was playing with adults at that sort of point. So, I mean, we were lucky than a lot of the boarding school people because they had when they went home, a lot of them had quite an enclosed off life, which was kind of one of the dynamics I was saying when I went back. But at least we knew people, and there was a lot of variety. There were a lot of old people around that area, farmers. There were people in big houses, in small houses. It was just a lot of variety around there. I always felt I didn't quite fit in, but there was a lot of good experience about growing up in a small village.
Oh,
really,
yeah.
Really, we were lucky, and we were quite. I think we were quite seen as quite different when we got to boarding school. We were a bit rougher, you know. We were a bit more rough around the edges and sort of real sort of country people, I suppose. And that put us in good stead.
Did that mean that would be handy, that privilege going through life? But did it make you more of an outsider going back? Like, had your accent changed? Had your values changed?
Well, yes. And we did sound a bit different in the village. But then again, my parents were, they moved up. My parents are southerners, are Londoners, and they moved up north. And they were the first people to move into this village that weren't from sort of Sheffield or Manchester. So they were kind of different when they first turned up.
Okay,
But they were, you know, they were very social people, and they slotted in very well, you know. So we were always, you know, treated pretty well. But the boarding school, so...
Can I interrupt you with the boarding school? I just want, because we have to go for a break in a couple of minutes, so I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how the alcoholism looked in your house.
Well, we weren't a family that argued much. It was all quite, you know, I really sort of am quite grateful that there wasn't a huge power imbalance, really. Even my father was an alcoholic, he was well-mannered, and he spoke well, and he was good conversationally and that sort of thing. So he was well-regarded. He was very good at being at the pub. You know, he wanted to be at the pub all the time.
Yeah.
And people loved being with him at the pub, and he'd buy drinks and that sort of thing. But... so there's a lot to be grateful for. But when he came home, it was almost still like he was acting down the pub. So some of his humour, which would have been appropriate down the pub, was inappropriate at the dinner table, you know. But at least he gave it a go, you know. And, I mean, I'm very different now, and really having been in the programme for decades. If you'd have interviewed me 20 years ago, I'd have been quite resentful of what sort of happened. Mm-hmm. But, you know, having heard other people's story in Al-Anon, I've actually... thought, wow, it could have been a lot worse, you know.
Yeah. Which is one of the important things about Al-Anon, is that identification with other people, knowing that you're not alone, and knowing and coming to realise when you as you work through the steps that you've got a lot of gifts as well as a lot of distortions in your thinking. We'll go for a little break and we'll be right back.
WA carries the stories of our ancestors, forever watching over us and protecting us. Join me, Taldum Chogo Edwards, for Balam WA, a journey of stories, yarns and music about freedom and survival from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. every Thursday afternoon on 3CR, 855 on your radio dial.
As I walk alone on my dreaming track tonight, I can hear the voices of my elders. Their ancient sounds echo in my mind to the beat of clapstick and the dancing.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Trans Family are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Transfamily is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you would like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find them on your preferred podcast platform or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. Today we are talking to Andy, a survivor of alcoholism and boarding school, as it turns out. So... 12 steps, Andy. We were actually, before we get onto that, you mentioned earlier that you'd been to Al-Anon before your father was labelled by the medical profession as an alcoholic.
That's right.
What was the story there?
Well, so as I said, he died about 15 years ago. So what I was saying was that. When I'm in Al-Anon meetings, I probably do two or three meetings a week of Al-Anon. And they usually go for about an hour and a half. And every meeting I go to, well, I try to go face-to-face. There's a lot of Zoom meetings nowadays, but I like to do it the sort of organic way, really, if I can get there. And I don't really talk about the alcoholic that much anymore in recovery. But... I'll often mention it as a sort of prelude to some other point I'm making or whatever. And sometimes I will say my father was an alcoholic. And I was saying that it's not really, and it's not a put down, it's not even a label, but it is just something that I need to know that I'm affected by, and that's why I will say that. My sister's also an alcoholic too. But again, it's not a put down, it's just what I see as a fact. And another fact is that I've been affected by alcoholism. And I have to get that sort of alcoholism. He was an alcoholic, my father was an alcoholic, or my sister, in order to know the severity of what I'm dealing with.
That's great. So just can you list, or if you like, or discuss in depth what you see as the main effect or some of the effects?
Well... there was a friend of mine in my village that I grew up with that said, and this is when I was about, I mean, I left England to come to Australia when I was 21. So a couple of years before that, a friend of mine, a little bit older than me, said, the thing is about your father is that you can say one thing to him one day and he'll laugh at it. You say the same thing to him the next day and he'll go up the wall. So it was actually, looking back on it, it was nice that somebody, not nice, but it was useful for me, for someone to acknowledge that in the village that I grew up with, that my father was an alcoholic. And I probably could have done with a little more of that. I probably could have done with someone coming up to me and saying, look, your dad, even though he's a good bloke, he's an alcoholic and you've been affected. And if you're confused, I had a breakdown by the time I was 14, you see. So I went to this first private school when I was 8 to 13 or something. And then you swap after 5 years and you go to your next one. It was when I swapped and went to the next one that I had a breakdown within 3 weeks of being at that next school, because I thought, oh, I've got to start all over again. And they kept us so busy. It was burnout, really. I was burnt out by the time I was 14.
Cruel.
You know, the pressure of exams and the pressure of sport and just the pressure of everything. And really, you know, trying to keep up with my older brother, trying to keep up in terms of sport and achievements and that sort of thing, which I could do up to that point, but at 14, I just collapsed. So the entirety of that 5 years at my, what we call public school in England, which is really just private school, I started in the top form out of five, and every year that I went on, I came down a form until I was really, I left when I was nearly 19, and I've heard in Al-Anon, take the age you were when you shut down emotionally, add the number of years you've been in Al-Anon, and that's kind of your mental age or your Al-Anon age or whatever. So I remained that 14-year-old, possibly even in some ways an 8-year-old, which is when I was sent away, because you have to shut down with that stuff.
That's it.
Like as a youngster, well, I don't know if you have to shut down, but a lot of the reactions of being sent away from everything that's familiar to you is that it's too much. And as a youngster, you know, it's too difficult to ask yourself the questions, why have I been sent away here? What have I done wrong? Do my parents not love me anymore? You know, there's only, I think what happens a lot from what I've read is that there's only a certain amount of times you can ask yourself those questions until it gets too much and you shut down emotionally, mm-hmm. which is what happened to me. So then I started at 14, 10 years of depression. The first 5 years were really when there was the least acceptance about having depression because I was still being pushed really hard.
Especially in a boarding school, can you even say that?
No, I didn't have a word for it. Well, when I got to about 17, we had a really nice matron. So she's like your substitute mother figure because you're sent away from mother and everything that's soft and familiar. But your matron isn't, you know, she kind of puts the clothes away. It's a very old-fashioned place. And we were just 50 boys, you know, all of, you know, between 14 and 18 and whatever, just with one housemaster that had his own quarters. It was like a zoo in there.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. And, you know, these sort of places are seen as very sort of very polite people. There wasn't a lot of violence, really, but there was a lot of bullying. And I think the bullying is there in the system purposefully.
Yeah.
You Absolutely. Either sink or you swim. Absolutely. They don't want the sinkers. They only want the swimmers. And if it's only 1 in 10 that do, that's enough for them.
And they don't want to do all the work themselves.
That's right. Yeah. It was actually, in a way, done on the cheap, if you look at it
exactly.
in some way, you know.
Yeah.
So I had that breakdown for 10 years. And, so the matron, who was a really nice lady, luckily, she recognised that something was wrong. And I got put on antidepressants for about 3 months. But then I came off them for some reason because I showed signs of improvement or something. But there really was no help. It was a place without love. All my family members were either alcoholics or affected by alcoholism. We were all dispersed. We were sent away. So that was the dynamics of my house. It wasn't one of much arguing and violence, but the energy was still, you know, there was still a lot of energy in that alcoholic home in terms of the effects. And the effects in my alcoholic home is that we all got kind of exploded out, mm-hmm. really.
That's really interesting. The unpredictability of a parent, the pressure to conform to what the world that you've been put into, the collapse, the emotional collapse and the emotional shutdown and 10 years of depression – it's almost everybody's story that's been in Al-Anon in some way or another. Mm. And it doesn't mean, you know, it's, for you it was boarding school, for me it was migration, for other people it's other things. So the fact is that that family can't support you. They don't know that you're under too much pressure or that you're emotionally shut down. So,
yeah.
And that's the kind of abandonment, I think. So, Andy, another thing I was interested in is, we talk about the 12 steps and people can look them up. They might know about them from listening to the show. I'm interested in how we were talking in the break about how you could apply the 12 steps could be used for recovery from boarding school attendance. And you've got a little story about this.
Yeah, so when I started looking into my story a bit, having talked in Al-Anon meetings and telling people my personal story, a bit as I am now, I realised that I'd been affected by boarding school and did a lot of reading about it, some research, and found out the best authors on it and did probably a good 3 or 4 years of looking into it. And I went to some boarding in London. I took the train down to London and went to some sort of boarding school recovery day or something. And there was about 80-odd people there. And I thought, I bet some people here are in 12-step programs. And So there was a few, anyone could say what they wanted for a couple of minutes at the end. I said, look, it's been really good being at this boarding school recovery day. If anybody is interested in looking at starting a 12-step group, a recovery group for boarding school survivors, as we called ourselves, come and speak to me. So there's a couple of people that came to speak to me. And we started one in London for a bit. I think we used to meet every month in Soho. But we just couldn't get the numbers. And it's funny you ask that because I still have the contact details for maybe half a dozen of those people who used to come to those Boarding Schools Anonymous meetings.
Boarding Schools Anonymous.
Boarding Schools Anonymous, yeah. And so I got in contact with one of the ones that used to help me run the group. And I said, you know, maybe we should start Boarding Schools Anonymous again on Zoom. Because we couldn't get people there face-to-face, you see.
And six people's enough.
Yeah, six people's enough, but we just couldn't. You know, I was coming back to Australia and you know, somebody else did something else, and we just kind of disbanded. We just couldn't get it off the ground properly. I think if we'd hung in there, if I'd have lived in London at that point, but I was living over here, we'd have hung in there, probably would have grown. But I did hear, in the research that I was doing for boarding school and the damage of boarding school, there was a psychologist that said that he worked with boarding school survivors and other people and other clients who weren't boarding school survivors. And he said that the hardest people to get to open up were the boarding school survivors.
Yeah, thoroughly shut down.
Yeah. For reasons I was speaking about before. Mm. So it was just the other day I got an email back from this guy saying there is actually a Boarding Schools Anonymous now. And I think he was saying it was face-to-face. And he said he's going to send me the details. So
wow.
That's where we're at. And that's in London. But it might be a Zoom meeting. But if I come on here again, I'd
love you to come on again.
Because there are, I think, Anne, quite a lot of boarding school survivors in Australia. A lot of people have done the geographical from those schools and gone, I'm going to sack my family.
Yeah, and I'm going to start
a long way
away.
Yeah.
Australia must be full of people like that. And there's boarding schools here. Probably not the same sort of militaristic structure, but yes. Now, if anyone's out there thinking we shouldn't be talking about boarding school, we should be talking about alcoholism, I'm just going to say the longer you're in Al-Anon, the message in Al-Anon is that it's not about the alcoholic, it's about you. And this is why we don't discuss the alcoholic in Al-Anon at all, really. We talk about ourselves. So the boarding school is completely relevant as anything. It's really about how we deal with emotional shutdown's a big one and often collapse into depression or other mental illness. So we're going to stick with the boarding school thing because I'm enjoying it, finding it interesting.
Okay.
Can you, I'll prompt you if you forget some of the steps. I'm going to challenge you to go through the steps and apply it to boarding school recovery.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that because my first sponsor and I didn't get a sponsor and go through the steps till I was 4 years into Al-Anon. And it's quite a while ago now, but I wasn't ready to do the steps or chair a meeting for the first 4 years. And, so I had a sponsor, and this sponsor said to me that you can apply any problem to the 12 steps. And I think at the moment I was having problems with a family member ignoring me or something like that. Mm. And my sponsor said, well, take it through the steps. So applying the steps to boarding school, which you can do. So step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcoholism and that our lives had become unmanageable. So I'm powerless over the effects of boarding school. That's how I would, you know, just as I say, I'm powerless over the effects of alcoholism. And a condensed version of the first three steps is, I can't, God can, let him. So step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, I translate that as there is a better way of doing things. And, you know, if you can't do anything else, maybe just believe that there's a possibility that things can get better and that there is a better solution out there. Because a lot, this language from the 12-step groups was written in the 30s. So when I first came into Al-Anon, I thought, well, firstly, I immediately recognised this is where I needed to be because of the honesty in the rooms. Because I knew at that point that I'd been 5 years past my rock bottom. So my rock bottom, the worst it ever got, was when I was 23. And I got into Al-Anon when I was 28. So in those 5 years, I was doing counselling and some self-help books. I was really doing a search on how to get myself better because I'd been in enough pain at that point. I'd been in 10 years of depression, and I was sick and tired. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I couldn't get enough sleep. You know, no matter how much sleep I got, and I got a lot, I was never replenished. I was unemployable. I couldn't conduct relationships. I was on the other side of the world. You know, we say in Al-Anon that we can be as sick as the alcoholic or sicker than the alcoholic. And I think at that point, I was probably sicker than my alcoholic father, you know.
Well, you didn't have the anesthetic or the alcohol.
No. So the boarding school, yes. So step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know, I translate as, one of the translations is, there is a better way. All I need to do is believe at this point that there is a better way, because there's still 10 more steps to come. And step three, about turning our will and our lives over to the power of God as we understood him, just means to me that for me to find a better way of doing something or anything, I have to put my old attitudes, my old preconceived notions behind me, or at least aside for a bit. So it follows on from the step two, which I translated as there is a better way of doing things. And step three, in order to do that, I need to put my old ways of doing things aside. And, you know, that's about turning our will and our lives over to something greater than ourselves. So step four is a lot of writing, actually. You write down a lot of your resentments in columns and what happened. It's an inventory. So you go over your past and all mistakes you've made and resentments that you have. There's a lot of writing. My first step four took me 18 months, which included a lot of procrastination. So step five. So I did a step four, a lot of writing about my boarding school. So I just wrote down all of the teachers I could remember, and I found resentment for all of them because it was a very authoritarian place. I was in trouble. I was in trouble a lot of the time. And I was also in trouble for things I hadn't done. So I had a lot of resentments around that because I was very anti-establishment, you know. And I was from an alcoholic home. So, of course, I was going to kick back on the system. So step five is you read out your step four to your sponsor. And step six, I listed all my my part in things that I discovered in my step four, which were things like oversensitivity. So even though I had resentments that I wrote down in step four, in the last column of that, the final thing you do in step four is what your part in it is, or what my part in it was. So it can be things like belligerence. You know, sometimes it's very hard, if you've got injustices that have happened, to find your part in it. But hopefully you'll have a sponsor that is patient with you. And you just sit with it for a bit. So oversensitivity came up a lot. And I was realizing that I didn't have to be... Just because I was given an offense, I don't have to take that offense. So I wrote down all my character defects that came up in step four for my step six. And then my step seven was to draw a line down the page and find the opposite of all those character defects, which didn't take long.
Well, because you haven't got many.
So step eight is made a list of all persons we had harmed. Then I have to look at my past. And, you know, that was difficult in terms of boarding school because I was just a boy. You know, but somebody said to me, who also went to boarding school a couple of years ago, when you were at your boarding schools, were you a bully or were you bullied? And I'd never been asked that before. And I said both.
Both, yeah.
Because the bullying is in the system.
Yeah.
But when I got a bit older, I was trying to take down the bullies, you know. So at least I was sort of growing up a bit. And so step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed. And then step nine, you have to go. Well, you don't have to. You don't have to do anything in the program, but if you choose to, you go and make direct amends to those people that you've harmed. Which, because I had depression for 10 years, was not a very long list because I was so shut down. I couldn't make decisions. I didn't have opinions. So, and at that point, when I was 23, when I was at my rock bottom, I'd been over in Australia for a couple of years. Then step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were on, promptly admitted it. So that's what I try and do in my everyday. Just because there were plenty of injustices at my boarding school, and actually a lot of justices as well, as I found out, as I've got better. I've had to keep present with my life and go, okay, well, just because I've had these injustices, I can't let it hold me back. You know, that thing about just because I'm given an offence, I don't have to take that offence.
Especially you don't have to take it and carry it for your whole life.
Yes. I was fed up of doing that. And see, these steps are a process that you take things, which is why you probably asked, well, you could take anything through these 12 steps, take your boarding school damage through the 12 steps. And then 11 about prayer and meditation, and then step 12 about passing the message on.
Which you're doing now.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Well, that was brilliant. That was a brilliant little journey through the 12 steps there.
Tune in to Billabong Beats Tuesdays at 11 a.m. with me, Gavin Moore, giving a voice to both Western Kulin and Kulin First Nations peoples. Join me to talk about philosophy and dreamtime stories surrounding the waterhole, the sacred fire, the land, the plants and animals. Billabong Beats, 11 a.m. Tuesdays on 3CR.
If you're a renter with problems such as repairs, getting your bond back, negotiating a rent hike, or facing eviction, it helps to know your rights. For free information and advice on renting, you can visit Tenants Victoria at www.tenants.vic.org.au, Arnica Legal at www.anikalegal.com, or contact your nearest community legal centre. The government is planning to demolish and redevelop high-rise public housing towers in Melbourne. If you're living in a public housing tower and need free legal advice about your options, find your nearest community legal centre at www.fclc.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR Digital Radio and live streaming on 3cr.org.au/streaming. We're talking about Andy, talking with Andy about recovery from the effects of being close to someone with a problem of alcoholism, and also about being a victim of the boarding school system in England. But more generally, we're talking about the applicability of using the 12 steps to deal with any problem. Andy mentioned before that the effects of alcoholism on him were eventually mental breakdown and 10 years of depression and emotional shutdown, and that this was alcoholism and the boarding school. So it's just that we're on the 12 steps now. But before we talk about that, Andy, I thought you made a really interesting point before when you were talking about steps 4 and 5 about the problem of injustice. Mm. So I think a lot of people in the 12 step, especially in Al-Anon, I think when they see that they need to make amends, there's the sense of absolute injustice. Mm. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because it's a real tricky problem.
Yes, it is, isn't it? I mean, I wouldn't want to keep coming back, you know, 2 or 3 times a week to meetings where people are just whinging all the time. and I wouldn't come back. So that's not what happens. But, you know, in the alcoholic home, as in boarding school and other environments, there are bad things that happen. You know, there are injustices. And we have to look at what happened. So in the last two or three years, I suppose, I've been sharing in Al-Anon meetings about the trial of what happened in the alcoholic home. And it's one of the dynamics I think that happens is you have to trial things and trial the injustices. There were bad things that happened and they have to come up either when you're sharing in meetings or going through the 12 steps with your sponsor. And, you know, for me, shut down, being emotionally shut down was not going to be the way forwards. And it's a bit of work because there's a lot of things that come up that you've either forgotten or you didn't know were injustices, bad things that happened that now come up. So sometimes, and you see this with newcomers, sometimes it wasn't difficult for me to come as a newcomer because I was 5 years past my rock bottom and I'd done some therapy and, you know, I was ready. At my rock bottom, what brought me out my rock bottom was asking for help. So 5 years on from that rock bottom, and the first time I'd asked for help is when I got in the 12-step programs. But you do see it, Anne, with newcomers, I think, it can bring up a lot of difficult emotions when they first come in. And a lot of them leave. I don't know why they leave. I've never drifted away from the program. But you can see it. And speaking to them after the meetings, they're, you know, in a bit of a state. Fortunately, some people stick with it. Some people don't. So, yes, does that answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, the injustices, yes. Shall I carry on?
You can. I've got something to say, but you can carry okay. on. I'll say my thing, yeah. And then that might prompt you. I had to actually talk to someone, not doing an amends, but talking to them about what stuff happened to me that was not, that I'm angry about. Oh, that is resentments, isn't it? That is part of the steps. But I had to sort of unload all of that stuff that had been shut down, and it included things like you feel disloyal to your family or to someone who, you know, that feels hurt you in the past. But I had to do that with all the ugly crying and all of that that had to be done. And it doesn't say in any of the 12 steps go and do a big – have a big ugly cry with someone, but that was very important to loosen things up, and then you can start to pick through it. You know, as you say, despite the injustice, is there anything that I could make amends for? And I've also recently had a new idea of amends doesn't mean necessarily apology. It means making things better. To amend something is to make it better. So I don't have to go up to my alcoholic parent or my non-alcoholic parent and say I'm sorry for what I did when I was 15 or something. But I do have to, if I want to follow the program, make those relationships a bit better, letting it begin with me and not staying in the depths of anger at them.
Are there some people that you... Because it does say we make amends to people unless it's injurious to them, unless it causes injury to ourselves.
That's right.
Or others.
That's right.
Were there some people that you decided not to make amends to?
Absolutely, yeah. And I've got a lot. I've got a lot of amends that I'm still. They're still sitting there on the maybe list because I'm not sure yet. And it's a bit of procrastination, bit of laziness, bit of I'll just leave it alone, you know. But, right, we've only now got 3 minutes. So tell us anything you want to tell us about your recovery in any way at all.
Okay, well, I've never stopped coming back to Al-Anon because I don't know what's going to be revealed next. And I'm always interested in what's being revealed at the time and what's coming next. I've stopped sort of projecting into the future about, you know, how am I going to recover next? And I've also stopped, that somewhere down the line, I also stopped sort of trying to order my higher power to give me relief over some sort of character defect or some situation next, because it doesn't happen in my order. I just go to the meetings, I share as honestly as I can. You know, every meeting is a unit of recovery and things happen. And for me, really, to have kind of faith in anything or trust in anything is quite a turnaround because... I lost my trust in all people, particularly my parents and everybody older than me, all of my peers, all institutions, everything. I ended up very, very alone and very lonely because I had discarded everything through the turmoil of growing up in an alcoholic home. So to be able to make decisions and judgments about what I can trust and who I can trust and who I can't puts me in a lot better position.
Mm. Yeah, that's a huge thing, isn't it? Mm. Once you've got that, because that's what you liked, that from what I've heard of your story that you've just told, that was that bewilderment of a child, to be able to feel I'm safe here, and the safe places in the world that you've chosen to put yourself
in. Yeah, and I have found that there are safe places, you know, that the world is not as scary as I made it out to be, and there's really good people about, and there's some damaged people about, and I, as the Alcoholics Anonymous people say a lot, try and stick with the winners.
Okay.
But I also have to be a bit careful of that phrase, because I'm in a community, and I'm in a nation, and I'm in a family and a household. And so the best thing I found there is that I can share this stuff with people who are willing to listen and who are probably teachable. And I can't really share it with those that are unteachable, really, because they've just got their own stuff to go through. And being able to spot that is makes my time a lot more efficient.
Because one thing we haven't mentioned a lot in this chat is one of the big effects of alcoholism on Al-Anon members is they get into trying to help people a lot. So
yes.
It's a real
addiction.
Children
of alcoholics, we do try and save the world, you know.
Yep.
And can get us into trouble. So it's good to be able to spot those that I can have an expansive relationship, and those institutions that I can have an expansive relationship. And that allows me to see, you know, where the corruption is a lot as well.
Yeah. Brilliant, Andy. Just before we go, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
By the way.
Yeah, you too.
But before you go, tell us about your long association with 3CR.
Oh, yeah. So, I've been donating and subscribing on and off for about 20 years. So, yeah, when I first came to Australia, I was chatting about this before, I was just amazed going through the AM dials in a car or something about, these community radio shows that we still have nothing like this in England. Maybe it's opened up a bit more in some other forms of medium. But, yeah, I just used to listen to 3CR and the job that I used to do on my own with my headset on Monday mornings a lot. I used to listen to it Wednesday mornings a lot and Friday mornings. So still looking at the schedule now, it's changed a little bit. But, you know, Joe Toscano shows and Democracy Now! And a lot of the Aborigine shows I used to be fascinated by. You know, because they were talking about a lot of the stuff from my background that I really identified with, you know, the injustices and stuff.
Yeah, injustice, yeah.
And to feel that sort of kinship with them is just incredible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've just subscribed just now, as you know.
Good on you. good on you, Andy. Thanks so much for coming in.
No problem. It's been fun. Thank you, man.
This is a Living Free. No, this was a Living Free show. That's all we've got time for. So thanks again, Andy. If you're concerned about drinking in a relative or friend and would like to find out more about Al-Anon family groups, then you can phone them on 1-300-252-666 or go online at alanon.org.au. If the content in the segment you just listened to has raised questions or caused distress to you, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au. Coming up next, we have Balanoir, hosted by Uncle Chaljum Choco Edwards. And Uncle Choco is a friend of this show. And so Gavin is who we just played Gavin's promo for his other show, Billabong Beats. He does the paneling for Uncle Choco. Join Uncle Choco on a journey of belonging and movement through sing-alongs and yarns. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned now for more Radical Radio on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.